After years of pushback from big business, it looks like state-owned entities like Transnet, Eskom and Denel, to name a few, may not be forced to use or hire BEE-compliant companies in the future. All in all, Minister Enoch Godongwana has changed the BEE rules for the enterprises. Joining us now is activist and scholar Kaya Sithole. Thank you so much for your time, Kaya. I actually just want to find out from you, which side of the fence are you on? Do you think that this is progressive or does it take us back?
Oh, no. I'm not on any side of anything. It's the policy makers that have to take a decision and decide what it is that the voters who put them into power would like to see. Yeah. So what we do know is that obviously the commitment to transformation is something that South Africa agreed on many, many years ago. It's something that we've tried to infuse into our procurement processes through the implementation of progressive procurement policies. Unfortunately, the best intention notwithstanding, it hasn't worked as well as it would like. And obviously the developments now I had a reflection of the collective sense of frustration that the state-owned enterprises have expressed, but also businesses expressed, and also some political leaders have expressed for different reasons. So state-owned enterprises were arguing that sometimes it makes it very difficult for them to get the best products at the fastest time out there in the market. They may discover that I have the right product, but if I don't have the right empowerment profile, then they're not able to immediately transact with me. Mm. When it comes to policymakers, the frustration has been that having designed what they thought was a very good and well thought out policy, its effects have just not translated or have not cascaded onto the wider population out there. So everybody has got something to complain about, and whether these new regulations are going to get us there is what we have to wait and see.
All right. I now want your analysis on how you viewed the workings of BEE policy so far. I mean, do you think that it seems that there's a trade-off between growth and transformation, or do you think that the one cannot exist without the other?
Well, the most important thing that's been missing is the requirement for honesty. And the honesty is that for as long as you say that I need to be able to onboard a third party, whether it's an exempt enterprise, whether it's a youth-owned enterprise, and allocate a particular part of the transaction to them, that comes with increased transaction costs. If South African citizens are comfortable with the fact that the only way you're ever going to get that additional partner to be part of the economic ecosystem is for us to be able to bear that additional cost so that they learn the experience and they can grow on their own, then that's fine. The problem with South Africans is that they like to assume that you can have these particular benefits without having the trade-offs. So one of the trade-offs is that if we're going to actually then say that we specifically want to give space to small businesses, to local businesses, they are going to have to be contrasted against international, multinational businesses that have the skill to do this, if they've got the experience to do this, and can be able to do it at a much lower unit cost. So when you look at how the procurement regulations were designed, it was trying to balance those two considerations. So it's the question of technical expertise, which should never ever be negotiated on. And then there is the balance between the economic efficiencies and the empowerment, commitments that the country has made. And I think it's that particular trade-off that people sometimes have not been honest about, to say, yes, we do acknowledge that it comes at an increased cost, but we accept that increased cost because it enables a business that would otherwise never reach the scale to suddenly start getting, traction in the market.
Kaya, do you think that the challenges that we've seen in terms of corruption and lack of skills in these service providers maybe disproportionately clouds the benefits that BEE policies are designed to produce?
Well, if you look at an instance like Trillion and McKinsey, for example, where the best intentions of the BEE policy was to say, look, you are a multinational company that's clearly got zero empowerment credentials. You've emerged as the best technical specialist in order to aid us in this, but we do need you to onboard a local partner and do some skills transfer to them. Philosophically, that's the right idea. But of course, what it then did, it then enabled an organization like McKinsey to say, well, look, our fees, XYZ. If you want us to onboard someone else, we'll simply just add that additional fee and then not even bother to bring them on site. So that's obviously a very corrupt manifestation of what BEE was supposed to be. It was essentially bastardized in that particular instance because McKinsey had no interest in actually assisting that new partner or that additional partner learn the skills that would then be able to enable that local company in the long run to say, look, we've partnered with these multinational companies across multiple projects. We are now able to tender on bid on our own, which was the intention of BEE. Mm. But of course, what we've then seen is that people simply see it as an additional but unnecessary business cost that they can maneuver their way through without actually living up to the spirit of it. So the elements of corruption have obviously been implemented by organizations like that just simply never accepted the spirit of BEE.
Okay, I'm wondering how the government can sort of balance now things going forward, because you look at, people that are fighting obviously against this new regulation, basically now putting the government's credibility at a very on edge, because now, I mean, in a country like South Africa, we do rely on those kinds of policies, BEE, to push the economic redistribution, a transformation agenda. But at the same time, the country is in such a dire situation right now where it kind of feels like it shouldn't really matter where, the service is coming from. So how do you think they can balance that out?
Well, I think that example that you cited of the desperation where essentially it's an emergency situation where we shouldn't have to worry about who provides the resources, that happens in limited instances. It is a common occurrence for organizations like Eskom and Transnet, who tend to acquire very expensive and very specialized high capital items that are probably not readily available in the local market. So that is an exception rather than the way things are. I do not think any municipal organization can argue that it procures the types of goods or services that are so rare in the market it cannot onboard localization components and local suppliers into the picture. The problem that we have is that the Constitutional Court, incorrectly in my view, decided that the minister didn't have the discretion to essentially issue a binding directive across all state organs to say this is how this procurement policy should be done. What the Constitutional Court then said is that all individual state organizations have got the autonomy and the discretion to decide on their own procurement policies. So the regulation that was gazetted last week Friday simply says that you, as an organization of state, must decide what your specific procurement goals are going to be and then find a way of putting it into the tender. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it will still be the reality that most organizations will still say, well, we still want to pursue empowerment, so they will simply do that. Yeah. What the gazette that we saw last week does is that it gets over the hurdle that was created by the Constitutional Court. Let's say that you, as the Minister of Finance or the Minister of Trade and Industry, do not have the power to instruct all 700 or 800 organs of state and other parts of the state on what to do. Give them the power to do it for their own. So, of mm-hmm. course, all these organizations can simply just do things the way that we're doing them and still continue to pursue empowerment.
This is definitely one to watch closely. I'm sure we'll be getting a lot of commentary on that going forward. Thank you very much for your time, Kaya. Activist and scholar Kaya Sithole.